So there were two things that struck me about this case as I was thinking about it. One was that, again, the psychosocial background where these decisions are being made. I want to bring that in as we talk about some of these new data. But the other is the biology, because there's kind of an interesting end or next step in the story. Why don't you bring us up to date?
So this was 6 months ago, and when she relapsed, having barely completed 6 months since her last dose of chemotherapy. And that's when I realized, after all the tears were shed and now we need to make decisions, that's when I realized I had no data to base my next decision and what to do for this woman. And so this is someone who I assumed had triple negative disease as part of her metastatic process, who I assumed was relapsing from metastatic breast cancer. I did not have tissue. And as far as trying to make decisions, I reflected on the available data. So this is someone who had also relapsed on potentially the best schedule of paclitaxel, at least when compared to every 3 weeks. And is a patient who will not have been eligible for E2100 because she had finished her paclitaxel within 12 months. And so she will not have qualified for that study. So I didn't have any specific data set to help me here. But I was also in a situation that I felt that perhaps it might be worth thinking about using bevacizumab, and also dealing with the fact that I would have one shot, which is in my setting, I would be able to use bevacizumab with paclitaxel. I would not be able to use bevacizumab with another drug.
And that's based on the formulary?
And that's based on the PNTU formulary in my institution, that you're allowed to use bevacizumab in combination with paclitaxel and as first-line therapy. So I discussed all of these issues with the patient, and I found myself doing a one-patient clinical trial, if you will. So that's what I decided to give her. In the absence of any data to support me, other than the extrapolation from E2100, I decided to treat her with paclitaxel and bevacizumab. And she received treatment. She received cycle 1, week 1 on a Monday, and she went home. And a week later, she comes for week 2. I decided to use paclitaxel 80 per meter square, given on a 3 weeks on, 1 week off. When she came in for week 2, she came in walking, and her peripheral edema had disappeared.
She was in a wheelchair?
She was in a wheelchair for distances to come from the car into the clinic when I first saw her. She came into the clinic walking. Her peripheral edema was gone. Her ascites had significantly diminished. Her liver had shrunk after one dose of paclitaxel 80 milligrams per meter square and one dose of bevacizumab.
So where are we right now?
She went on to have a excellent partial response with resolution of all peripheral edema, with almost complete disappearance of the liver disease. Her tumor markers improved. Neil, you're talking about the mental health of the team. I can tell you that I have never seen my nursing staff smiling as much as they did when they realized what was going on. And I did a lot of smiling myself as well. And I was very hopeful, again, not having any data at all, what was going to happen with her, that perhaps she was going to have a long progression-free survival, which actually was not the case. She actually just had disease progression after 6 months on weekly paclitaxel and bevacizumab. I had to gradually decrease the dose of paclitaxel from 80 to 60 milligrams per meter square because of her peripheral neuropathy that began to come back. And one thing which was interesting, and as if you listen to your patient and the symptoms, she would swear that the week off paclitaxel, she could feel her tummy getting a little tighter and perhaps a little more pain.